This episode of Mile Higher is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with Auto Quote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 308. I'm your host, Kendall.
And I'm your host, Josh.
And we are joined by our incredible production team, Janelle and Ian.
What's up?
Hi.
Nice to be back. Well, I guess there was an episode last week, but this is our first episode back in the studio. We took a week off and we're feeling refreshed and ready to go. We missed you all. And today we are actually going to be looking at the disappearance of Ryan Stuka. And this case is absolutely baffling. It's another one that just leaves you going through all the different theories, what could have really happened. And yeah. It has stumped investigators and just people in the area, people all over the world for years.
Yeah, this took place up in British Columbia at a well-known ski resort, actually. And it's one of those cases where the person seemingly vanishes into thin air.
Yeah.
With little evidence to suggest one theory over another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the family obviously has their theories, and we'll be presenting all the theories, but obviously some make more sense than others.
Yeah.
With this particular case, but a very important case because the family is still actively going up to the ski resort on a yearly basis. Or even a monthly basis, possibly, and continuing to search for him up there. And it's been a number of years now since he disappeared. But
and when it first happened, they were really leading the charge. You know, they were out there for a long time, as long as they possibly could. But it's obviously an expensive resort. We'll explain all of that. But yeah, it's very, very sad, especially because Ryan was so young, you know, just at a place in his life where he was unsure of really what he wanted to do with his future, but was kind of taking this risk, going out on his own for the first time, and seemed to be really enjoying life at the time.
Yeah, doing what he loved. Big snowboarder, obviously. Yep. You know, working at a ski resort, that's like one of the perks is you get to, you know, hit the runs before everybody else does, and really having a good time with his friends, and, you know, really living the dream. And seemingly it all just stopped. One particular night, and then he's just never seen or heard from again. And I mean, we have no idea.
And what makes it so difficult, this case in particular, is the conditions where he disappeared. You know, it's absolutely freezing, really tough terrain, super forested area.
Yeah, Canadian mountains, man. It's no joke up
there. Yeah, no, definitely not. But yeah, lots to go over. So you ready to just jump in?
Yeah, let's take you from the very beginning, starting with...
Actually, once again, I did want to, again, mention our NECMEC merch. We still have a few items available in this collection, but we are selling through them quickly. So if you want to get your hands on one, definitely take the time to do so. You can get them at kendallray.shop, and 100% of the profit is donated to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So thank you for all your support. So Ryan Stuka was born on March 17th, 1997, to his parents Heather and Scott. And Heather always said, this kind of cracked me up, that she was surprised when he first came into the world because he was kind of an awkward-looking baby, that he was long and skinny. And she actually said, quote, even the cat was cuter than him. But soon, even as a kid, Ryan really came into himself, and Heather absolutely adored him. Their family first lived in Edmonton, which is the capital of Alberta, Canada, and Scott worked in construction, and Heather was a guest services manager for WestJet at the airport. Now, 2 years later, their family welcomed their first daughter, Jordan, and moved to Beaumont, which is a suburb about 40 minutes away from Edmonton near the airport. And Ryan was the typical older brother. He often didn't want to play with his little sister and would tease her, which is a trait that Heather said he got from his father. But when Ryan teased her, he would give her a little gift or finally would ask her to play after it was all over, kind of as his way of apologizing. So he was a good big brother, just typical sibling rivalry. But even as a little kid, Ryan adored dinosaurs, as many little boys do, and played with a dinosaur toy just about every day, which is important to note for later. When he entered school, he was placed in the French immersion program, which I'm not really familiar.
Well, I mean, up in Canada, a lot of the different provinces are majority French speaking,
right.
Which I think
we forget
yeah. about as Americans, yeah. thinking that everybody in Canada speaks English, but actually a large population of Canadians natively speak French.
French Canadian, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. I mean, probably went to school with some kids that spoke French.
Yeah. And in school, he really had a tight-knit group of friends. He was very social, and he would be, you know, close with these people the rest of his school years. Heather said that Ryan could be himself in a group of friends, cracking jokes, being loud, but in a large setting, he would, you know, sort of stay back and observe. He was a little bit more introverted. Kind of sounds like one of those outgoing introverts, which is kind of how I identify myself. He wouldn't seek out parties without his friends there and spent many nights just playing Xbox with one or two friends instead of going out. He was also a very active person. He played rugby and did water sports at their family's lake house. And when he was little, Heather put him on the Little League hockey team, which I cannot imagine how cute that was. But Ryan actually hated it. He would cry and cry before practices, and eventually Heather just decided to pull him out. And when Ryan was a teenager, he asked his mom why she pulled him out, which made Heather say, quote, "But you begged me to take you out of it." Needless to say, Heather and Scott were always very supportive of Ryan's decisions. And more than anything, though, Ryan loved snowboarding. The family would often take trips to the mountains in Alberta, but Ryan always liked snowboarding the slopes in British Columbia because the weather was a little bit warmer, still really fucking cold, but Ryan was pretty good, and eventually he could do a backflip off of a jump and just spend the whole day on the mountain, or days, you know, consecutively.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty good if you can do backflips off of a jump.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Most of us can't even go off a jump and land it.
No.
Doing backflips is pretty sick.
I can't even handle the chairlift, man.
Yeah, you're not a big fan.
No.
We live in the skiing capital of America.
I grew up skiing. I was on a ski team for a while, but then at some point when we were in college, Josh and I were on a chairlift and I had a panic attack, and that was the last time that I did it.
Such a shame.
I know. I need to get back out there, face that fear. There's something about, you know, flying down the mountain. It's so freeing.
Oh,
so
it's the
beautiful.
Best. It's the best.
I see why he loved it so much. When Ryan was 8, the family welcomed their youngest, Juliana. And while Ryan would still tease his younger sisters, he was a little more understanding now that he was older, and he ended up getting really close to his siblings, and he referred to Juliana as the baby.
And it was around this time that Ryan met his best friend, James. James was another ski bum who worked with Heather at the airport, and he would bring her tea during late shifts, and the two would get dinner together. And he was very, very close to the family, and he and Ryan were on pretty similar paths. So when Ryan graduated high school, he wasn't really sure what to do, as many of us are. You know, you never really know what you want to do till, you know, you get out there and try things out. But he was always a smart kid, and he just wasn't quite sure where he wanted to, you know, put his path on. But he liked being active. So for his first year out of high school, he took a job at his father's construction company, which makes sense. I mean, easy hookup with the job, and it paid $24 an hour, which is a really good starting pay straight out of high school.
Definitely.
And so after that first year, he wanted to try college, and he did 1 year with a focus on finance. And while Ryan did well in school, he thought practically about what type of job this degree would allow him to pursue. And when he started thinking about this more, he's like, I don't really know what I would want to do with this degree. So he decided to defer for a year after that. And again, Heather and Scott were highly supportive of Ryan throughout this entire process. They didn't want Ryan to be locked into something he didn't care about, and they knew he would give it his all once he settled on something that he was truly passionate about.
I think that really says a lot about them as parents. So often parents just want to push kids to just get going with anything, and to allow your child to take a little bit more time to explore and really end up doing something they love, I think is really cool.
Well, I think there's this whole debate now, especially of this idea of why are we pushing kids straight out of high school into right into college?
It's totally insane.
When you almost need that time, you know, a break after high school to really kind of get your mind around what your next steps are going to be. Because I feel like so many kids just get kind of funneled into college and then they get to college and they're like, what the hell do I do? And then you end up picking a major that you don't really want to do. How many kids switch their majors? I mean, you're one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, tons of people. I'm sure you guys either switch majors or classes or whatever it may be because your interests changed as you started figuring things out. Because you're really still a kid, too.
Yeah, you're at 18, young. Yeah.
You don't know what adulting's like. You're not thinking about, like, am I going to be able to support myself with this career? Am I really passionate about this?
I know. It would be really cool if, as a society, we could take that year in between to really find yourself and to explore things. But yeah, as a society, we like, you got to jump right in and get going. Well, we're going to be so far behind.
Capitalism, baby. You know, you got to start running the rat race immediately. It's a shame because a lot of people end up in careers and or waste a lot of money on college that they don't end up using. And, you know, it's, you know, I wish there was a better way that, you know, we could do things. And I wish schooling was maybe changed and you know, the curriculum was a little bit more focused on helping kids find their passion. Because really, you can make a career out of anything you're passionate about. It's just finding that thing and locking in on it. But this episode of Mile Higher is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. But anyways, back to Ryan. He had done a year of work and then a year of school, and now he wanted to do a year of travel. So his mom offered him some discounted tickets to visit family overseas since he had never left Canada. But Ryan didn't really want to leave Canada. He wanted to live alone and do something that he loved. So during the summer of 2017, Ryan told Heather that he wanted to work at a ski resort with his buddy James for the following winter. And of course, Heather was supportive. She was happy that Ryan had found some passion and was following through on his plan. And still, at this point in time, their family was very close, and Ryan just started to bond very seriously with his siblings after he graduated. Heather said that they had a, quote, perfectly imperfect family, and this would be the first time one of them left home. Ryan and James applied to several different ski resorts, mainly in British Columbia. They liked the weather better in that region. Like we mentioned before, the hills were nicer, and they probably wanted a little bit more space between them and their families. And it didn't take very long before they both got jobs at Sun Peaks, a resort town 9 hours away from Beaumont. James arrived in November 2017, and then Ryan came the following December. Now let's talk about Sun Peaks a little bit. It's important to note that Sun Peaks is very fancy and boasts over 130 runs and trails. A two-day adventure pass costs around $2,400.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's pricey for sure. And rooms, even during the summer, run around $160 a night. So it tells you if it's $160 a night in the summer, in the winter, you know, multiply that by like five. Yeah,
at least.
And like any ski resort, we have plenty of them up here. All of us have been to countless ski resorts. And I feel like all ski resorts kind of have a similar vibe to them. You know what I mean? Like, obviously they have their nuances and, you know, they're all a little bit different. But as far as like the culture goes, it's very much a place of fun, I feel like. You know, there's restaurants, bars, sometimes there's clubs depending on which resort you go to.
You're normally like pretty cool people.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, it attracts a lot of temporary, you know, workers from different countries like, you know, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and you know, a lot of people from these countries would come up to Sun Peaks to work there during the season because, you know, they get to live and work on the mountain. It's kind of the dream. And I know Colorado's resorts are very similar in that aspect. But The one interesting thing about this area of Sun Peaks is that there's no local police force, which I was thinking about that. I feel like most of our ski towns here in Colorado definitely have a police department. I'm pretty certain.
Yeah, So I think the main difference is that, like, with Colorado ski resorts, the town is actually like right there.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, at the mountain. Yeah,
yeah, it's like so close. Whereas, like, in this case, the closest town is, you know, about 40 minutes away. So I think it's just isn't really considered at that point. Because, like, if you think about it, is there a police force for Disneyland? Kind of, but there kind of is. Hey, that was a bad example. But no, I think, like, most resorts just kind of are either close enough to a town where it's not a problem, or they just don't consider that anything bad is going to happen here.
Right, right.
And that doesn't go to say that there's not, you know, if you call emergency services at the ski resort, nobody's going to respond, right? Mm-hmm. It just means that they don't have the, you know, the officers actively patrolling that area. Completely, like, they'll respond to service there. It's just,
of course, yeah,
they're not, you know, actively on the streets, you know, mm-hmm. you know, patrolling and all that kind of stuff. So they're a little bit ways away, which, I mean, there's tons of rural places where it's like you've got two deputies for an entire county and, you know, response times are going to be pretty slow and there's not going to be that active patrolling going on, which is pretty important when it comes to this case. But with no local police force in the closest town, Kamloops, which is about 45 minutes down from the mountain, it becomes a dreamland for those who work there. You can work your shift on the hill, ski all day, and then party all night with those who came for the same reason as you did. Ryan spent his first few weeks in employee housing before he and James moved into a two-bedroom lofted house on Sun Peaks Drive, which is about a 20-minute walk to the resort area. Now, this wasn't glamorous living by any means. Ryan and James shared a bunk bed with a TV on the dresser. That's kind of fun, though, for two friends to bunk up like that.
Oh,
I'm sure that was a blast.
A lot of stories.
And then their roommates were Chris and Kristen, who was a couple who shared one of the other rooms, and then two girls, Ellie and Jasmine, who actually slept in the loft. And most of them, including Ryan, were working for $11 an hour, which was British Columbia's minimum wage, and were paying $400 each per month to afford the rent for the house.
It's crazy how cheap that is considering how much money this resort is raking in.
Well, I mean, you multiply it, was there like four groups of people here or three groups of people?
He's not doing this for the money in any regard. No. Like, he's going from a $24 an hour job mm-hmm. with his dad to like double bunking it with his best friend for $11 an hour.
And I think that's common. A lot of people who work on ski resorts, like, they're not in it to make a bunch of money. They're in it because it's the experience of working on a ski resort and you get to ski for free and, you know, you have access to it.
I just think it's so cheap for the resort with how much they're charging. They're probably making so much money and then that cheap of labor, but...
Yeah, you always wonder where that money's going.
I know.
At these resorts. Mm-hmm. And it's...
I've always wondered that. Like, a day pass at Vail is like $300 now or at least $200. And I'm like... The snow is free. I know you have snow machines, but for the most part, the snow is free. I get you have to upkeep, you know, the lifts and the lodges and whatever, but I'm also like...
How much are you actually paying the people who are maintaining the slopes?
Like, you'll have to be raking in...
Well, Vail Resorts is a massive corporation.
Or like Aspen.
Or just even like more like Keystone is expensive. You go and like buy a beer and it's like $18.
That's crazy.
Or a burger is like $15. I'm like...
Well, they're like, where else are you gonna fucking go?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing about it, is it's kind of a monopoly because they know you don't have a lot of options, so they can charge those prices.
Yeah.
Exactly what it is. But like we said, with Ryan and his other roommates, they didn't seem to mind the low pay. They were all, you know, benefiting from the perks and just enjoying their lives. I mean, hanging out together, going out at night, skiing by day. I mean, it was truly the dream, and they're really there for the slopes. And Ryan was very financially responsible. He still had savings from working construction with his dad and only paid for rent and his car payment with his debit card. He'd go to an ATM for money, which would be all he would spend for a few days. So, I mean, that's kind of a parent's dream. You know, he's financially responsible with his money. He's doing something. He's happy. Like, what else could you ask for?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, that time in your life where you have the opportunity
right.
to do
something young,
like
and
that.
And I like that attitude of a parent of like realizing like your kid's only going to be young once. Mm-hmm. And like, that's like one of my regrets is I was like kind of thrust into the adulting work world immediately out of high school. And I missed out on so much fun and just like experiencing life, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
You really did.
And I mean, I'm thankful that I did in hindsight because, you know, obviously where I'm at today, but part of me is like, ah, it would have been cool to go hit the slopes. I would love to go spend a winter on the slopes just skiing every day.
And, yeah, such you know a cool I mean? Experience you remember for the rest of your life.
Totally, totally. So props to him for doing that.
So he started work as a ski lift operator before assisting on the Tubing Hill. Now, tubing's more my
tubing
speed.
Is lit, man. If you're so not a snowboarder fun. Skier, go somewhere that has a tubing hill. Mm-hmm. Super fun.
So his shifts typically started at 11 a.m. and then went to 7 p.m., though he was known to arrive about 5 minutes late to squeeze in one last run before work. Pretty awesome setup. But his supervisors didn't seem to mind if he was a little bit late. They even offered him a promotion at one point, which Ryan actually turned down because he didn't want the responsibility. So that just really shows you his mindset. He's really there for a good time. He kept in contact with his family, but they knew that he was out having fun, being busy, experiencing life on his own, and they didn't expect, you know, an immediate response from him. Heather would text him in the mornings, and he would respond later or even the following day, and they totally understood that. And he would Snapchat his sisters, but Heather said, quote, "We were lucky if we got a FaceTime." Then Christmas rolls around, and Ryan told his parents that he didn't want to make the 9-hour drive home just to have to go back to work the following day. So he decided to stay in Sun Peaks for the holiday. And of course, they were kind of bummed out. They understood. And I totally understand, too. That's a long drive just for one day. But she wanted him to have a good Christmas. So she called him and asked what they were doing. And when she found out that they had opened presents and were skiing for the rest of the day and he was having a great holiday, she jokingly said, quote, "He doesn't need me." Heather and Scott were so proud of Ryan. He was making new friends, showing financial responsibility, and proving that he could live independently and have fun while doing it. He had a fling with another young woman who was also working on the mountain, but otherwise, he kept with James and his roommates. And although there was a party or event pretty much every night, Ryan would only go if his friends were planning on going. Otherwise, he was happy to just stay at home with James and play video games. I mean, he was a very chill type of guy. However, after Ryan got off work, a night out was planned for February 16th, 2018. And the day started pretty typical for Ryan. He got up early, got some runs in, and he, of course, arrived at work about 5 minutes late and started helping people on the tubing hill. Ryan got off at 7 like normal and texted James to let him know that he was on his way home. He had already paid his rent and his car loan and had taken money out of the ATM as they planned to go to a silent disco at a bar in the town called Bottoms. Interesting name for a town. I've always wanted to go to one of those silent discos. They look really fun.
This episode of Mile Higher is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with Auto Quote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
I've been to one.
Yeah,
I don't mean to speak ill, but it was one of the stupidest fucking things in my entire life.
Really?
So, yeah, it was so stupid. I was like, for one, I was high as shit. I was high as shit, and I was just like looking around, and I took off the headphones and just stared at all these old people like bobbing, and I was like, get me the fuck out of here. Dude.
Really?
Yeah, man.
I hate no disrespect to silent discoers.
Well, I don't know which one you went to. You went? Would you go to a nursing home?
They were old. I was actually shocked. It was old people.
Yeah,
old
you people. Must have showed up at the wrong address or something.
Hey, old people can cut a rug, okay? They're some of the funnest people to dance with.
Did you just say cut a rug?
Yeah, of course. They cut a rug.
Okay. Maybe
I'm trying to speak their language. That was the term. Cut the fucking rug.
With what?
Well noted, Ian. I guess for our next company event, we'll go to a silent disco. How does that sound?
I'd have a great time.
How about we just make our own? Just in the warehouse.
Yes.
All right.
With
down.
You guys, it would be fun. You know, you're not 60 years old.
Isn't the whole point to have your headphones and you go to different, and like mine light up blue because I'm listening to X channel and yours are on red because you're listening to a different DJ. And then like go together and like, oh, we're both on blue, so we're listening to the same music. And then you can go over here to people who are listening to the red and like.
Oh, that's so cool. I always thought it was just the same music.
No, I think that's how most of them work.
That's how the one I went to worked, but it sucked because then you'd see someone with blue and you'd go over to talk to them about the music and it would just be like,
oh yeah, you can't talk.
There's no talking allowed.
Yeah,
it's a silent disco.
Yeah, it is.
It's like Justin Bieber or Justin Timberlake's fucking like when he's like dancing on the stairs.
That's what it sounds like. It'd be fun just to watch it without your headphones on.
That's what I did, and I'm telling you, it was like. I felt like
you regretted it.
Yeah, I felt like I was in an urgent care, just like waiting.
That sounds fun to me. I would love to watch them cutting a rug. So Ryan was one of the few workers in town who had a car. He had a Volkswagen Jetta. So he gave a coworker a ride home since temperatures were already plummeting into the nighttime low of -4 degrees. Absolutely freezing. And when Ryan returned home, he ate quickly and then shotgunned a beer before leaving with James, Chris, Kristen, Ellie, and her boyfriend who was visiting from New Zealand. And it's important to note that the legal drinking age in British Columbia is 19. So when they got to Bottoms, the line to get into the disco was long. Again, it was -4 outside. And on top of that, it's essential to note Ryan's outfit. He was only wearing jeans, Van sneakers with ankle socks, and a thin long sleeve shirt, along with a snowboarding jacket. But obviously it was pretty cold, and they were expecting to be in the bar like right away, not just standing outside. But luckily, they were next door to another bar, Masa's, where their roommate Jasmine was actually working at the time. So they grabbed a few drinks, and once the line died down, they got into Bottoms. And the last known photo of Ryan was taken here, and he looks really happy, like he's having a great time. He's got a beer in his hand. He's got his headphones on for the silent disco. And while it's unknown how intoxicated Ryan was, he had spent his cash from the ATM and had taken 3 hits of MDMA, which is a pretty massive dose. I'm not familiar with MDMA, but from what I've looked up, that's a lot.
It's really, not to speak to too much personal experience, but the only time I've done it was like less than half a hit. And it really? Still was like, oh, you know, so I can only imagine what 3 hits is like.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
that is
gotta
pretty
be crazy. So we're not really sure what his experience with MDMA or other drugs really is, or if he, like, you'd kind of assume that if he was taking 3 hits that he had had some type of experience with it before, but there's a chance that was his first time and he just maybe didn't realize what he was getting into. Who really knows? His mom, Heather, said she knew that he smoked weed. And although she wouldn't allow it in the house, she recognized that he was an adult and could make his own choices. And of course, the family or anyone else really doesn't know or hasn't spoken, at least, about Ryan's past drug use and if it was usual for him to take such a large dose. So Bottoms had its last call around 1 a.m. And Ryan and his friends were lucky enough to get picked up by an airport shuttle about to head back down the mountain to Kamloops. Typically, after a night out, employees would gather at one of the workers' housing condos, and it was not necessarily a party. The host wouldn't offer beer or drugs or anything, but workers could show up and hang out as, you know, sort of an after party if you weren't ready to head home after a night out. James, Ryan, Chris, and Kristen headed to the Burfield Drive gathering. The normal condo that they would gather at was actually further down the mountain, but for whatever reason, this other condo on Burfield Drive was chosen for them to all meet on the early morning hours of February 17th. And Ryan's group of friends didn't seem to mind, as this condo was only a 5-minute walk away from their house.
Ryan's buddy James didn't stay very long at this gathering. He was actually the first of the group to head home, and he left around 1:30 a.m. because he was pretty drunk at this point, and he accidentally walked home as if he went from one of the other workers' condos. And although this path would have also gotten him home, it just would have taken him an extra 10 minutes. And as the temperatures are reaching -4 and dropping, he didn't want to stay in the cold too long. So James realized his mistake, turned around, and then took a newly constructed path built after a hit-and-run accident 3 years earlier. And then at around 2:10 a.m., Chris and Kristen also decided to head home. Before they left the house on Burfield Drive, they turned around and saw Ryan putting on his coat. So they assumed, you know, he's probably going to be leaving shortly after us and he'd be close behind. But this would be the last time that anyone saw Ryan ever again, which is just so eerie to think about. When Chris and Kristen got home, they saw that Jasmine had finished her shift at Masa's and invited a few friends over. They said hello, but before long, everybody went to sleep and Ryan never returned home. The following day, Ryan's roommates assumed everything was normal. One of the roommates received a text from Ryan's supervisor to check to see if he had overslept, as he was later than usual for a shift on the tubing hill. They checked his room and saw his unmade bed and assumed that he had woken up early to snowboard a few runs before his shift and just had gotten stuck on a chairlift or something. But at 7 p.m., they received another text from the supervisor that Ryan had never showed up for his shift, period. His roommates at this point began to freak out, and even though most of them had only known Ryan for a few months, they knew he would never just be a no-call, no-show for a shift. They checked his room and found that his employee pass and boots were still in the corner, and so they decided to go back to the party house to see if he had just crashed there. And when no one there had seen him since the previous night, and no one could even remember seeing Ryan leave, that's when, you know, the real panic starts to set in and his roommates started calling local hospitals. The hospitals informed them that no one named Ryan Stuka had checked in and that they should file a missing persons report. So I can only imagine, you know, getting that news and it kind of hitting you like, oh no, what happened to Ryan? Mm-hmm. Like, he was just there with us and now he's just missing and he's not at a hospital. They're telling us to file missing persons report. I'm sure it was just,
especially they're, you know, thinking about the conditions.
Yeah. I mean, they were partying and, you know, having a night out and stuff. And I'm sure, you know, the worst case scenario starts coming in. But James reported Ryan to Kamloops RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And within an hour, an officer with a tracking dog was already searching the area where Ryan had gone missing. Then James texted Heather, who was drinking a glass of wine at a home in Beaumont. He said, quote, "Hey, Heather, hate to text you like this. Haven't seen Ryan since last night and started to get worried about him. We ended up filing a police report, so I wouldn't be surprised if the police called you as well. Just thought I should let you know."
Imagine what it would be like getting that message. The way your heart would just sink.
This episode of Mile Higher is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah, it's just every parent's worst nightmare.
And obviously this caught Heather off guard. I mean, she was like, what do you mean you haven't seen him? She had actually texted Ryan earlier that morning and he hadn't responded, but this was normal for him not to answer for a day or two. So she, you know, just went through the days like she did every day, like everything was normal, but she never imagined that Ryan would be missing. So Heather and Scott called the Kamloops RCMP around 7 p.m., and that's when the police informed them that they had dispatched a tracking dog to the area, and if nothing were found during the night, that they would begin a full search and rescue operation the following morning. And at this point, Heather and Scott were faced with a choice. Do they wait at home and see what the police find, or should they somehow get up to Sun Peaks as soon as possible? So the following morning, they made an appointment with Kamloops RCMP and started the 9.5-hour drive to the mountain at around 10:30 p.m. Heather described this as, quote, "the longest and shortest drive of my life," as her and Scott had to pull over every 15 minutes to catch their breath and calm down. On the way over, they didn't hear anything from the police, which I'm assuming would just make things so much worse, not getting any updates.
Yeah, your mind would just be all over the place.
They assumed that they had found Ryan and were waiting for them to arrive in order to break the news. However, when Heather and Scott finally did arrive at Sun Peaks on the morning of February 18th, there was still no trace of Ryan. The police had turned the ski patrol building into a command center and had already dispatched teams of canine units, infrared drones, and helicopters to search the mountainside. They interviewed everyone who attended the gathering on Burfield Drive and established the timeline for Ryan's last known whereabouts. They received dozens of tips from locals, but none matched what his roommates had said. So just kind of you know, there's a lot of confusion going on, you know, with investigators and what they're being told by those mm-hmm. at the gathering versus what other tips are coming in. So it's kind of like, well, where do you start?
Yeah. Just trying to make sense of what possibly could have happened. And yeah, just that car, 9.5 hours. Oh, just terrible. And yeah, I would have the same thoughts that maybe they already found him, that he's deceased.
They didn't want to call them while they're driving up there and give them the news that they found mm-hmm. him deceased.
Put them in a dangerous situation, driving distressed like that. And they thought maybe he was already gone. Ugh, just
but then to get there and
nightmare.
Find out, oh no, we looked and we don't have any idea where he is.
And how could that be?
Right.
You know, especially there. So it's important to note that Sun Peaks is a really small town. It only had about 600 full-time residents, and mostly everyone on the mountain that night was actually from out of town, meaning they really had to get the word out quickly if they wanted to receive new information before people went home. In addition to that, about 5 inches of snow had already fallen since Ryan had gone missing, just to give you an area of, or an idea of how much snow actually falls.
Well, think about how that impacts tracking him too.
Exactly.
You know, those footprints or tire tracks or whatever it may be are going to get covered up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So
it's
the
getting,
evidence is going to be gone.
Mm-hmm. And it's giving, you know, it's making it harder and harder by the minute. It makes me wonder, because I know that when it rains, it's actually helpful for the tracking dogs because the water molecules can like hold the scent better. I don't know how, I mean, it must be about the same with the snow, right? Or maybe because it's getting buried, or I don't know.
So just a little bit of information on tracking in the snow. Obviously, like one of the benefits of the snow is it's leaves tracks, right?
Yeah.
So it's mm-hmm. can be easier as long as there's not snow covering up the tracks.
Yeah, it's so harder in this situation.
But colder environments have fewer smells than warmer ones.
Okay. Interesting.
Making them olfactorily less noisy for a dog's sensitive nose to pick out the right scent.
Mm.
The low level of available scent is difficult for the dog to detect. However, this is mitigated by the otherwise sterile environment, so the dog will not have as many or as strong of scents from which to sort the proper odor.
Okay.
And hot weather can cause scents to dissipate while the cold can hold them in longer, allowing search dogs to pick them up. But fresh snow might be another matter where if it falls after the tracks have been laid, it can obscure them. So it can be helpful, but if there's snow covering it up, it could essentially, I think, cover up the scent.
So yeah, it's really getting harder and harder by the minute. And it's just so much snowfall. The snowpack was 14 feet deep in some areas, to give you an idea. So police assumed that Ryan, in his short walk home, maybe got disoriented, walked through the woods instead of on the path, fell into a tree well, and then passed out.
Which, if you don't know what a tree well is, if you know, if you've ever been somewhere in deep snow, it's kind of when the snow falls around trees because the, you know, the branches are covering mm-hmm. up the bottom of the tree. There's essentially a hole around the base of the tree that,
and it's like lighter.
Yeah. And like I've snowboarded through trees before and fallen into tree wells before.
Yeah.
If you get too close to the base of the tree, you don't realize that, oh, there's no snow there. So then you fall into a hole that is difficult to get out.
Yeah.
So,
I have too. That's fair. Moments where I just wanted
huge
to give
pain.
Up. Yeah. Definitely.
Especially on a snowboard. Mm-hmm. Skiers have it easy. You can just mm-hmm. like pop your skis off and climb out. But a snowboard is such a pain.
Well, and like in Ryan's case too, if I understand why the cops would go on this, because if the snowpack itself is 14 feet deep, that means that the tree well is going to be close to that as well.
Yeah, so
that
would super deep. Yeah,
super deep. That would be a horrible fall if you took it, like even sober.
Yeah, so totally.
Yeah, I totally understand why that was their first inclination.
Well, then if you pass out, you're out there in below freezing temps mm-hmm, for hours and hours and hours. It'd be very easy to, you know, get hypothermia and die.
Quickly.
So
yeah. Yeah.
So, or suffocate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or suffocate from snow falling on top of you or something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, so scary. However, using an infrared drone, the only thing that police could find was a short trail of footprints further down Burfield Drive. And this was dismissed as it didn't lead anywhere off the road. They also determined that the last time that Ryan's phone pinged was around 3 a.m. in the Sun Peaks area. However, this doesn't mean much because due to the secluded nature of Sun Peaks, phones will often ping on cell phone towers at least 12 miles away, if not more. And there was no conclusive evidence that Ryan was in Sun Peaks at 3 a.m. The police thought they could find something, you know, maybe Ryan's hat, his jacket, footprints, anything that would point them in the right direction. But as the day ended, Kamloops RCMP couldn't find anything. So police issued a statement and alerted all residents to check their garages and sheds to see if maybe Ryan had hidden out in one of them. Then they informed Heather and Scott that they would be suspending their search very early on, because if Ryan was on the mountain and exposed to the elements, he would have almost certainly passed. And with snowfall continuing to fall on Sun Peaks, a search and recovery mission wouldn't be effective until the spring. So they told them that they're going to stop their on-the-ground search, but would continue investigating tips as they came in. And as you can imagine, getting that news so early on absolutely devastated his parents. After just one day, the police had called off their search, and she knew that she and Scott were going to have to do this alone. And major props to them, because they absolutely stepped up and did everything that they possibly could. Heather returned to the ski patrol building on February 19th and asked if she could still operate her search from the command center. And they were really cool about it. They said yes and gave her and Scott a desk and access to the building whenever they wanted.
This kind of reminded me of Duncan McPherson's case.
Yeah. Same.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Because his parents, like, they had to stop the search up until spring, and his parents had to get really involved in it.
Oh, yeah. They had to completely they had really bad experience with law enforcement, too.
Mm-hmm.
And no help from the resort, too. So yeah, this is a little bit more cooperation here, but
yeah,
kind of
the
similar.
Resort was horrible in that case. Remember that?
Yeah.
God. Yeah, I will say this is one of the few cases where, like, something has happened at a resort where they don't try to distance themselves from it. Like, they could do more. I don't know. But as far as I'm concerned, they were like, they did not hide anything. They let Heather and Scott do any, like, search whenever, wherever, like, really super helpful in this.
Yeah. Shout out to Sun Peaks. So friends of the Stukas, who had ignored their wishes, I'm sure they didn't want to, you know, burden their friends and family. And they said, nope, we're going to come up and help. So they all drove, a lot of them drove up to Sun Peaks from Alberta and helped in the search. Scott actually bought an excavator to dig up snow piles packed in by plow trucks. I just cannot imagine being out there doing that and knowing what you're searching for. Just horrendous. Wouldn't wish this on anyone. But their small team did not give up. They searched every day. And thankfully, the locals in the area were super welcoming, let them search their properties whenever they wanted, and just tried to offer them as much support as they could. But still nothing came from their ground search in those first few months. They spent every day combing through the mountains, following the paths that Ryan may have walked down, searching buildings on private property, even going as far as the ski runs. The resort accommodated the Stukas and gave them free rein to conduct their own private search. And then in April, the largest break in the case came when one of Ryan's roommates discovered a text that they had received from Ryan at 1:30 a.m., in which he said he was about to leave the party. So that puts the timeline at least 30 minutes earlier and allowed for tips that were initially dismissed to now be considered. So pretty unfortunate that they didn't find this text earlier. I'm not sure what the situation was there. Maybe they opened it and they were also drinking, didn't realize they had it. I mean, who really knows?
Yeah, it's interesting, especially since they pulled his phone record to see where his phone pinged.
Yeah, it's so strange. Definitely have some questions about that part.
Yeah.
We weren't really able to clear it up.
I really couldn't find, I was like, I personally can't think of a reason why in an investigation a text would go missing for months at a time. Like, maybe they had deleted their messages, like, before they realized Ryan was missing and then recovered them.
And who even really just deletes messages, right?
Not me. No, you know, same. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of odd.
This episode of Mile Higher is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with Auto Quote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
But the most credible tip actually came from a sober person who said that they saw Ryan walking into the resort center at around 2 a.m. In the original timeline, Ryan would have still been at the party, but now that 30 minutes would have given Ryan enough time to walk from the party to that house on Burfield Drive and then to the resort. There was also a pizza place that would stay open till 2 a.m. to serve the night crowd, and Ryan had gone there before to, you know, grab a quick bite after a night out. So they thought, you know, maybe he left the party at around 1:30, realized he was hungry, and tried to walk to the resort to grab a bite before bed. But unfortunately, neither of the security cameras at the resort's entrance nor the one at the pizza place worked, which it's seriously almost every case we cover where security cameras just aren't working. I will never understand. What is the point of even having them?
Yeah, because we could have confirmed whether or not he'd actually gone there.
Right? It's like, why?
And help firm up the timeline a little bit. But because you don't have any proof that he actually did, then it's still a big question mark. And
just
still could be anything.
So sick of reporting that a security camera wasn't working. It's in almost every case I cover. Just don't understand. I'll never understand.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a good answer for that. I think it's just outdated, a lot of outdated technology that, you know, a lot of the old systems are just kind of a pain to maintain and break a lot, you know, break all the time and have to be kept up on them for them to stay working. I think people just like get them installed and some people don't want to pay the money to like keep them running, but they use it as a deterrence, right? To just have it so people think that they're being watched and recorded, but they're actually not, you know?
Yeah.
So
it really
it's a
should
shame.
Be a law that you have to have your security cameras checked every certain amount of time. I don't know. It's so frustrating to me that endless cases we cover have this issue and that it could have been the crucial bit of evidence that would solve these cases. You know, it just seems
like if people are just more informed, maybe they'll you know, it's a great way to help keep people safe around you is have your think about how much just Ring doorbells and video doorbells have done for keeping neighborhoods safe.
Yeah.
And helping catch criminals, you know.
Yeah, I mean the technology has gotten so good and it's not that expensive to have them. It just seems like it should be a requirement if you're running a business that serves the public. I don't know, that's just my opinion. Maybe that's crazy, but just sick of seeing that every week.
Or sometimes businesses will, you know, just have them go off at a certain point in time to save space on the hard drive. You know what I mean? There's a million reasons why they couldn't be working. May not just be like negligence, like they just didn't like keep up with them. I just want to
I just covered one in Texas where they weren't working and one in Florida where it wasn't working. I mean, it's everywhere, but.
But then what, should we have the government put up cameras everywhere? Just all over the place?
No,
like
I'm just saying businesses
other countries?
Should have their cameras working. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
I think it's a double-edged sword, right? It's, you know, people want privacy as well. They don't want to be watched by everybody. But I get on the same token, could help solve a lot of crime.
Yeah,
for sure.
If I was a parent and a security camera could have made that big of a difference in my child's case, I'd be like just so infuriated. But anyway, Ryan's bank account had frozen since he had disappeared and he likely would have paid in cash anyway. No one at the pizza place remembered even seeing Ryan that night, so chances are he wasn't even there, but can't confirm.
Then there was another tip that was less credible, but seemingly more sinister if it's true. After Ryan was first reported missing, an anonymous person left a tip indicating that they had heard a man screaming, quote, "Get in the fucking car," near the resort's entrance just after 2 a.m. So that's another tough one, right? Like, no way to know if that's credible or not. But if you assume it is credible, that's a very, very telling piece of evidence because it then suggests that perhaps Ryan was forced into a vehicle and actually left the Sun Peaks area. But we'll talk about that more here later on. While this would line up with the new timeline, it's important to note that no one else in the area, even those outside, heard the reported screaming. On top of that, the police could never get back in contact with the original tipster. While a car was seen leaving the mountain at around 4 a.m., it's unclear if police tracked down the driver or ever talked to them, interviewed them. We have no idea. Kamloops RCMP returned a search in June once the snow had melted. However, the summer months also bring their own challenges, as there's only about a week after the snowmelt that the forest floor is clear before thick underbrush grows in, making searching just as difficult as it is searching through the snowpack. Because, I mean, this is a lush, lush forest, and all that moisture, you know, causes a lot of that undergrowth to come through very, very quickly. When the underbrush grew in and Kamloops RCMP left the mountain, Heather and Scott faced another choice. They hadn't returned home for an extended period since February, and Sun Peaks was very expensive to stay at. After nearly 6 months, Heather and Scott finally left Sun Peaks in the summer with no trace of Ryan. To have to leave the area where your son was last seen and return home because of monetary financial reasons is horrible. But it happens all the time to families. Heather and Scott returned to Sun Peaks once a month to continue the search until COVID forced them to stay home in 2020. They still conduct regular searches on the mountain, and at this point, thousands of volunteers have helped in the search for Ryan. Buses will regularly drive volunteers from Vancouver up to Sun Peaks for the day and then drive them back at night so that they don't have to spend a bunch of money for lodging in order to stay at the resort, which is pretty cool. Heather started the Free Bird Project with Tammy Neron and Kate Sinclair, whose brother and girlfriend went missing after a plane crash in 2017, and their bodies were recovered in 2018. The Free Bird Project is a nonprofit that supports private search and rescue and recovery missions. It raises funds for information on missing people and supports families. Heather also hosts the Run for Ryan every year at Sun Peaks, in which attendees ski in his honor on the anniversary of his disappearance. Heather also started a Facebook page for Ryan called Missing Ryan Stuka, which has over 66,000 members, and many people have bought the Stukasaurus, a small dinosaur toy that members have brought with them on vacation, so Ryan can still travel the world. There's some pictures of that, which is really cool.
I love that they did this. It's so cool. And really, a really good way to honor him and also keep the awareness alive. We were just talking about, it sort of reminds me of the Flat Stanley thing in elementary school. I love that they have the little picture of him on it, and I just think that is so, so awesome.
In 2022, Heather Stuka published Missing From Me, a memoir of her experiences searching for Ryan at Sun Peaks. And in one of her blog posts, Heather wrote, quote, "In the end, the memory of joy may amplify our present grief, but it also serves as a reminder of the beauty and richness of our lives. It is through this duality that we grow, learn, and ultimately find peace." And we'll link this memoir below. I've seen great recommendations on it. She seems like an amazing writer.
She does. Just an incredible mom too.
Yeah, really, really cool.
But powerful statement.
Yeah. In 2023, the reward fund for information to Ryan's disappearance was increased to $25,000. And this has generated a lot of new tips and information, but it's unclear if they are credible. Of course, you know, it's always tough to know, in fact, if a tip is credible because it has to be followed up on. And we're not really sure how much of those tips are actually being followed up on. I hope they would be, you know, being investigated, but we're not entirely sure. There's also an updated missing persons poster that has been recently created that we'll also link for you below if you'd like to share that on social media. But it's important to note up front that Heather and Scott do not believe there is any foul play in Ryan's disappearance. They also do not like the saying, "somebody knows something," because that would mean that now, 6 years later, someone is hiding something. They've gone on the record saying that they believe Ryan somehow became disoriented, fell into a snowbank, and was covered up by the plow the following morning. However, they said this right after Ryan disappeared, and this seems unlikely since the snow melted in 2018 and there is still no sign of Ryan. And I wonder if they still stand behind that theory that this was some, you know, an unfortunate accident and he's just not been recovered, or if they're more open to the possibility of foul play being a factor here.
They haven't gone on record about any new theories that they believe. However, the one thing that at least Heather is pretty clear about is she still does not believe foul play was involved. Mm-hmm. She still is very much of the opinion, like, at this point, someone would have said something. And I think that's a hopeful thing to say. Obviously, you don't want to imagine people, especially the people who have been helping you search, these locals, hiding something for so long like that. But I think from like our perspective, not being so personally involved in the case, it's kind of hard not to imagine that someone else was involved since there's absolutely no trace of him anywhere.
I can definitely see why they have taken that approach, and I think it makes the most logical sense that there was an accident of some sort. And I see why they don't like the saying somebody knows something, because that is something that law enforcement has said in their press conferences on the case. But it's implying, you know, I feel like it should be rephrased. Somebody may know something. Come forward if you do.
It's
but
very,
saying like
yeah,
just
yeah.
flat out somebody knows something implies that, yeah, there's something devious going on. Which
well, unless
chances are
law enforcement knows something more that the rest of us don't know.
Right.
And when they do say stuff like that, I am under the assumption that they're saying that because they know more than we all know. And obviously it's difficult for a family because you would expect law enforcement to divulge all the information that they have on your son's case to you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's not always the case. And again, I'm not familiar with how the RCMP conducts investigations, and it might be different than the way it happens here in the States. But I think that's something you always have to hold on to. And, you know, cases get solved decades later, and, you know, it's there's likely information that was being withheld because they were following that, you know, that trail, that lead, or building a case against somebody. And it would completely derail their investigation if they were to release that information publicly. So
that is a good point, because oftentimes law enforcement does take the approach, if there is an not an easier explanation, but an explanation where it could have just been an accident, something like that, they're going to really lean into that. But for them to have said something, someone knows something. Yeah,
that implies to me that there's persons of interest. There's some, they believe somebody close to Ryan may know more about what was going on that night, or could help clear up the timeline perhaps, or, you know, there's some information that they're missing.
It is interesting that his parents have been so just, they do not think foul play has occurred. That's very different than most cases we cover.
Yeah, usually it's quite the opposite. Usually it's even in cases where all evidence leads, you know, potentially to this being a tragic accident, the families are, you know, oftentimes leaning more towards that this was foul play. And obviously it varies on a case-by-case basis, but I agree. I've never really seen a family stand so, you know, strongly on this.
They think it
one,
was an accident.
You know, I just am like, they would have found something, some
I know you would
shred
think.
Of evidence, clothing, something to suggest that he just, you know, accidentally fell and died due to the elements or something like that, or nature, you know, whether it was an animal or something. There would have been some shred of evidence. Again, impossible to prove that, right? Because this could be a case where the elements were, you know, led to his demise and an animal hauled him off and there was no traces of that. The snow covered it up or whatever, and then it melted all away. You know what I mean? It's not impossible to think that this could have been an accident that just, it is what it is. But I do think that you have to look at the history of crime in this area, which we'll get into here in a minute. There's a lot of people that have gone missing from this area. There's definitely suspicious disappearances. There's murders. There's other things going on in this area.
But very different circumstances.
Yeah, very different circumstances. But I think I also go back to that tip as well of someone screaming, "Get in the fucking car."
But if you really heard that and law enforcement followed up with you and you just ghost them, I think that says a lot.
True. Could just be complete bullshit. Yeah.
I will also say it could, in that particular tipster's case, like it could also be that they weren't a local and they were on vacation. And then when they went back home, they just couldn't, the police couldn't get back in contact with them.
That's a good point, Ian.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying, is that happens a lot too.
I just think, with his parents having been out there for so long conducting the search, and, you know, your parents are going to be the last ones to hold out hope or to hold on to, you know, wanting to seek justice if something really happened. I think it says a whole lot that they, who have had the first-hand experience of being out there every day, they're seeing the conditions. And if they're saying that, they really believe he became disoriented, fell into a snowbank, and was covered up by a plow the following morning. I mean, it does make sense. So I definitely lean towards their theory. But there are some others. So should we get into some of that? Being an adult definitely has its high points. You get a lot more freedom. You're in control of your life most of the time. You can make choices that you couldn't have made as a child, like maybe ice cream for dinner or anytime. But it's not all fun. You also have to do your taxes and figure out what's for dinner every freaking night. And make doctor's appointments. And for that one, there's ZocDoc to help you. The healthcare app that makes adulting much easier. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and choose the one that's right for your needs. And click instantly to book an appointment. And we're talking about in-network appointments with more than 100,000 healthcare providers across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, eye care, skin care, and much more. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, who are located nearby, who are a good fit for any medical need that you may have, and are highly rated by verified patients. That's really the game changer, being able to see reviews from actual real patients. That's going to tell you a lot about the doctor you're trying to book. You can also see their actual appointment openings, choose the time of the week that works for you, and click instantly to book a visit. Plus, ZocDoc appointments happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking. Sometimes you can even score same-day appointments. I was able to do that recently, which was so, so nice. We love ZocDoc in our house. Josh found it a few years ago, actually, before they started sponsoring our show, and we've been using it ever since. We've gotten several friends and family to use ZocDoc as well, and everyone has had a great experience. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/milehigher to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/milehigher, ZocDoc.com/milehigher.
This episode of Mile Higher is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with Auto Quote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
So let's go back to the Kamloops RCMP's initial theory that Ryan had fallen into a tree well, got knocked unconscious, and died due to exposure. Again, for the same reasons as the snowbank, it's unlikely. Many have pointed out that animals could have scavenged his remains, as the area is known, of course, to have mountain lions and bears. But if this was the case, there likely would have been some sort of DNA evidence or signs of trauma in the area near the house on Burfield Drive or the road up to the resort. And animals likely would not have taken his clothes with him, meaning that his rugby hat or his shoes would have been left behind. Others have pointed out that Ryan had taken that huge dose of MDMA, and if there had been more drugs at the party, Ryan could have overdosed. Is it possible other partygoers could have freaked out and hit his body to avoid consequences? Since many of the workers at the house were from elsewhere in Canada or overseas, maybe they just thought to lay low until the search was over and then return home when the season ended. Of course, that's a possibility, but again, it's pretty unlikely, as all the partygoers were very cooperative in the investigation, and the RCMP and Heather's volunteers searched the house dozens of times. The RCMP and Heather do not believe, again, that foul play was involved, especially not from those at the house party. They seem to really trust the people that he was with. And it's important to note that if MDMA or other drugs did play a role in Ryan's disappearance, Heather doesn't blame or judge Ryan at all because he, quote, paid the ultimate price. So what about some of the other wilder theories that we mentioned in the beginning? The tip about the man screaming, get in the fucking car. Some people on Reddit, which obviously take Reddit with a grain of salt.
No way to verify these people's claims at all.
But some of them have claimed to have lived in the Sun Peaks area. But some of them say that Ryan had a fling with the girlfriend of a notorious Kamloops drug dealer and that he owed him money. Pretty out there theory, right? And as far as we can tell, Ryan only had a thing with one woman, a fling, and it doesn't seem like she had any ties to the area. On top of that, Ryan's banking did not indicate that he was buying drugs leading up to his disappearance. Every transaction was either rent, car payment, or the same small allowance from the ATM. And if he did owe a dangerous drug dealer money, he had plenty of money in his account to cover it. This theory claims that Ryan was killed taken off the mountain that night and that the girlfriend was thrown off of a cliff. And it's very overdramatic, as we weren't able to find anything related to a death of a young woman who was thrown off a cliff. I just pretty much put that in the absolutely ridiculous category.
Yeah, and like, let's be honest, there would have been more, there would have been something that law enforcement would have found to indicate something like this. And
definitely
the investigation would have went a totally different way and would be way more active than it is if this was remotely possible. I think so. I think it's pretty easy to discount this one.
Mm-hmm. But to explore that theory a little bit more, of course, like most cities, Kamloops does have its fair share of drug trafficking. In April of 2024, a drug dealer and Hell's Angel member, Zale Cody, pleaded guilty to charges of trafficking cocaine, conspiracy to traffic fentanyl, and possession of methamphetamine. Police not only seized the drugs, but also $335,600 in cash. So not a small operation by any means. And while Cody faces a potential 12 years for his drug trafficking, he has not been linked to any murders.
So really just insinuating that there are dangerous people in the area potentially, and as could their cross, their paths have crossed. Yeah, I think you could say this for, I mean, dig up this kind of stuff pretty much anywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That being said, at least six men, including Ryan, have vanished or died in the same area that Ryan did between 2017 and 2020. The only two that have been found were Ryan Poventure and Richard Skurr, whose bodies were found murdered a month after their disappearances. Their vehicle was found abandoned near Logan Lake in Kamloops, and their bodies were recovered 50 miles away near Spence's Bridge. Police have indicated that they found criminal behavior at the crime scene, but nothing else. Although the case is unsolved, it was likely drug-related. It seems pretty obvious. The two referred to, quote, business that they had near Logan's Lake, and Richard Skurr had done 7 months in prison for trafficking cocaine while he was a member of the Hells Angels.
Right, so this is like gang activity.
Mm-hmm.
Likely no link whatsoever to Ryan's case, but I think worth mentioning at least. But others have tried linking their deaths with a notorious killing spree carried out by 19-year-old Cam McLeod and 18-year-old Brian Schmigelski in northern British Columbia. And these teens killed a university lecturer named Leonard Dick, as well as American China Deese and her Australian boyfriend Lucas Fowler. This happened in around 2 weeks, around the same time that Ryan Preventure and Richard Skurr went missing in 2019. The two confessed to those three murders in a cell phone video before they took their own lives. While the two mainly acted in northern British Columbia and committed suicide in Manitoba, if they were responsible for the deaths of Preventure and Skurr, that would mean that they were active in Kamloops, and so, therefore, some have tried to link them to Ryan Stuka. Obviously, this is a big stretch. There are no signs of a struggle or trauma, nothing to link the teenagers to Sun Peaks, and this would have happened a year before their killing spree. Plus, if they confessed to killing the other three, why wouldn't they include the two men found near Spence's Bridge, or Ryan Stuka for that matter? Unfortunately, the most likely scenario is the most routine. Drunk driving is a serious problem in Sun Peaks, since there's no active police force patrolling aside from Kamloops RCMP 40 minutes down the mountain and serious party culture drinking going on. Many visiting the resort don't care about getting behind the wheel under the influence. Coupled with snowy driving conditions and a lack of sidewalks, hit and runs were pretty common. Everyone who posted it on Reddit who also worked at Sun Peaks seemed to have a close call at some point with a drunk driver. The path that connected Ryan's house to the party house was constructed after a hit-and-run accident 3 years earlier. So is it possible that Ryan was hit on his walk to town, the driver freaked out, put his body in the car, which would, you know, kind of line up with that anonymous tip, and drove them back to where they had come from? Again, though, this is pretty unlikely because physical trauma from the accident would have, you know, there had been signs of this, whether it be blood or something else that would have been in the snow and been picked up by canine units. And there was no damaged vehicles or vehicles at all seen leaving Sun Peaks until the one at 4 a.m. And again, it's unclear if police ever followed up on that tip or if they determined that it was unimportant or just not relevant to the investigation. So just worth noting there. But without any evidence, no credible public leads or breaks in the case, it's unclear if Ryan Stuka will ever be found. So of course, if anyone has any information about the disappearance of Ryan Stuka, you can call the Kamloops RCMP at 1-250-828-3000.
I think if there's one theory that I seem to lean towards, other than I do, at the end of the day, believe that he became disoriented and got hypothermia and, you know, sadly passed due to the elements out there. But if there's anything else, the drunk driving kind of resonates with me. I mean, not in every vehicular accident is there going to be blood, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if he's in a jacket and things could have moved quickly, could have been knocked unconscious. And then, I don't know, I think it's obviously getting more into the weeds and you have to kind of, it's a stretch, obviously, but I don't know.
It's,
that one,
it's still possible.
It seems like a lot of people believe that based on Reddit, you know, which who knows if these people actually live there, but people who have spent a lot of time in Sun Peaks have said that that seems to be like a popular theory. That could have happened, especially with it being so late at night and the driving conditions.
How often have you heard of a hit and run accident where the drunk driver, you know, stop after hitting somebody, stops, then picks them up off the ground, loads them into their vehicle, and then takes them somewhere, dumps them?
Yeah, that's true.
And you find out later on that they tried to cover up the hit and run accident.
I'm sure it's happened plenty of times.
Sure, I'm sure.
I personally have never heard of it.
Right, right. So I feel like statistically,
yeah,
seems like a less probable,
yeah,
theory to me, but not impossible again.
Yeah.
I just am really struggling with how much searching that has been done over the years and zero traces of evidence of Ryan being found.
I know,
and
it's
that's
just
what
the
I really struggle
is so
with.
Crazy.
Unless he walked up. Again, like people note, like this is a very forested area. It's very possible, like, you know, you could get buried and then lost, and you know, animals. I think a lot of people point to there's a lot of wildlife in this area, and you know, wildlife can break down a human body very, very quickly, and you know, then people are like, well, then there'd be evidence of that. But again, maybe there wouldn't be if he was frozen in a snowbank for, you know, a whole year. And then by the time he did thaw out and some animal came across him and then, you know, took care of the rest. I mean, it could be possible that there just wouldn't be any trace of him found. Or how would you know, like say there was blood and there was nothing else, like how would you know, that was human blood as opposed to just a deer that had been hit, you know, roadkill or
something. And had
yeah,
no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Because people say like they hike around this area all the time and they find dead animals all the time, you know, you know, just from whatever nature and, you know, accidents from, you know, getting hit by cars and things like that.
Yeah.
So it could be very easy to confuse that. But still, that doesn't necessarily, your clothing, your shoes and things like that don't just disintegrate, right? It just doesn't decay in the soil like that would still be there if he was in this area. But again, it could just be buried beneath the ground. I mean, we're talking about Duncan McPherson's case. I mean, he was in the glacier for 14 years before they found him. He was just encased in ice, basically.
Right.
And they found him eventually. But maybe this is another one of those cases where just randomly one day in the future his body turns up in some random place.
So, maybe
he
family.
Well, it's interesting to me that James is a big indication to how, you know, the level of partying that was going on that night. He got lost walking home, and they had a short walk home, and before he knew it, he took a wrong turn and he was like, oh shit, this is going to take me an extra 10 minutes because of the layout of the neighborhood. And he corrected his mistake, but what if Ryan didn't and he made the same mistake and he just, you know, he's disoriented, it's dark, it's cold, and he starts walking up some way and then, you know, he
just like, how far could he possibly have gone?
Right. Well, that's the big question is
it's baffling.
Yeah, or, you know, somebody did pick him up and, you know, people do weird things too, you know what I mean? Yeah. Somebody could have picked him up and he dies or something and they freak out and, you know, they don't want to get in trouble for it. So they just, I mean, it's very possible they took him off of the Sun Peaks area, just down the mountain, and dropped him on the side of the road somewhere. And then nobody's ever looked in that area. So I think there's a possibility he could be somewhere that nobody's ever looked, and be just because of how vast the wilderness is.
Could so. Very well still be out there. Chances are.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think he's alive at this point. I think he's gone, but this one's tough. Cause a lot of times I think we all kind of lean more towards foul play, but I think because of the circumstances of the night and what he was doing, I think it's very possible this was a tragic accident, and he just somehow wandered somewhere where he just hasn't been found yet. And, you know, hopefully they'll find him one day.
Yeah, I tend to lean towards the drunk driving, not because of evidence of a crash or anything like that, but simply because, you know, they've searched this area, the immediate area around the resort and the ski runs, for 6 years now, and they haven't found anything. And so to me, just by like reducing the evidence that we do have, I don't think that he's on the mountain. I don't think that his remains are on the mountain anymore. And so that's why the drunk driving makes sense to me. Again, who is really going to do a hit and run and then put the body in the car instead of just speed away, you know?
But I'm sure it happens.
I'm sure it's happened. And that's why that one makes the most sense to me, even though, you know, you'd think there'd still be something. Like, it's just the fact that there's literally nothing in this case. Like, absolutely nothing is really... It's unlike anything else that, you know, I've researched so far.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you, though. I think the drunk driving, I'd say, is my, like, second guess. But, yeah, I think it would make sense. And there's not always going to be evidence, you know? There's not always blood or signs of an accident, especially in conditions like that. So, but God, just terrible. Janelle, did you have, what makes most sense to you? I'm curious.
Just the fact that, kind of like Josh was saying, that there was so much partying going on and James was getting lost, it makes me think that they were probably heavily under the influence and that something happened when he was walking home. And I know you said, Ian, that you don't really think he's, you know, around the mountain. I have a little bit more of a belief that he might be, and that he just hasn't been found, especially because, you know, a large part of the year it's completely covered in snow. Things are frozen over. And you're on a ski mountain.
Right.
You know, there's tons of places where he could be still, and maybe he just hasn't been found yet. Yeah, I would say the second theory that makes most sense to me is the drunk driving. But again, if you're under the influence and you hit someone, would you really have the mindset to be like, okay, wait, stop and let's make a plan, like go get him, pick him up, drive him somewhere?
Or maybe being under the influence would make you think more rationally like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like you'd freak out and just try and get away as quick as you could.
Well, it makes me think about when people get in an accident when they're drunk and they'll just leave the scene.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why would that makes me think that they would have just left the scene.
But if, you know, your car's still there and the body's there, and maybe, you know, if you're disoriented like that, or maybe they weren't even drunk.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he could have just came out of nowhere. And
I mean, someone could have hydroplaned or slipped on black ice and hit him totally by accident. They were sober, whatever it is.
Just freaked out, put him in the car. Yeah. It seems, I don't know. I go back and forth.
I think that's like clearly purely just a theory, because there's literally no evidence to point to that.
I think makes me lean more towards just him still being there is Duncan McPherson's case. For him have been found 14 years later, and obviously different terrain and there's glaciers, right. And you know, I'm not super familiar with Sun Peak, but I don't know, he really could still be out there.
This is interesting though, because as much as I think that those theories are most possible based on everything we just talked about, this is coming from a retired RCMP investigator named Brian Smith, and he actually traveled from Alberta to help with the search at the request of the families, friend of theirs. And he was a Mountie for 25 years who had investigated several missing persons cases. He also worked as a ski patroller and horseback guide and his experience with many backcountry searches. His initial conclusion was that Ryan had wandered into deep snow and got lost in the rugged terrain around Sun Peaks. However, an interview with one of Ryan's friends changed his mind. He said the friend seemed to be very nervous and very afraid for himself, which was unusual to me. He would not reveal this friend's name, but my gut told me that this was most likely a homicide, not just a missing person.
Whoa.
And he said he shared his findings with the RCMP, but after extensive interviews with everyone involved with Ryan, police say they have no reason to believe foul play was involved. But so again, this is just his hunch based upon talking to one of his friends, but I you know, like there's a lot of cases like this where they're out with their friends and then something happens. They disappear. You know, we've covered a lot of them recently.
Yeah.
Where they were out having a night with their friends, then clearly something goes wrong. And then everybody kind of, you know, quiet, you know, everybody gets real quiet real quickly. You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting to me that there's not more people on Ryan's side speaking out and, like, you know, being as involved as they possibly could be in this.
It's hard because they are all so young, and I could see how you would be nervous to be interviewed regardless of if you
True.
Knew anything, you know, just like the idea that maybe these people think I had something to do with this. But that is interesting. Huh.
So I think it's something worth considering. And I mean, whether it was somebody close to him, I always in the back of my mind, just based on looking at a lot of different cases over time, is I always have the possibility in my head that there could be some type of predator on this mountain. And, you know,
in the middle of the night in that conditions out, like, I don't know.
If they know that there's people, you know, going to bars, as we've seen, people getting abducted after nights out, literally just covered that with with Brian Schaefer.
Yeah, it could have been.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's similar type of vibe, obviously different. Different environment, but I do think there is possibility that, and based on other active missing persons cases in this area, that there's always a possibility there is some type of well planned out methodical predator that could be abducting people from this mountain that could live in the area and knows this area, knows how to get in and out without being detected, and it's possible is all I'm saying. Yeah. I'm not saying there's any evidence whatsoever to suggest this. I just think when you don't have enough conclusive evidence to point one way or another, why not stay open? I mean, if you want to know the truth about what happened to your loved one, you know, I think staying open to the possibilities is the only way you're going to get to that truth.
And I mean, I don't know. It's hard because, like I said, they have the most experience with this. They've, you know, spent endless amounts of time going through every possibility in their head, which is a hell that I cannot imagine for the rest of your life thinking all of that through. And maybe for their own sanity, they've had to just, you know.
Which I totally empathize with. And, you know, I understand that totally. And I wouldn't tell them not to do that. This is a crazy world we live in.
Yeah, it
is. And there is dangerous people out there. And sometimes the most dangerous people are literally hiding in plain sight
and looking for people who are under the influence too.
Yeah,
you really can't forget about the MDMA too. It's such a massive dose.
Full-blown predators.
It lasts 4 to 6 hours, so he definitely was probably still tripping when he was out there.
Or how do we know it wasn't laced with something?
Yeah, that's true.
What if there is you know, some other drug that it was crossed with or laced with that then rendered him unconscious at some point?
Well, like as indicated by the Zale Cody arrest, like
these
operations, all of them are going to include fentanyl at this point. You know, that's, no one is selling pure MDMA. It's gonna have a little something. Same with cocaine. All of these drugs, like if
they're cut with something else,
If it's a powder, you know, there's something else in it for sure.
So scary, God.
So yeah. Lots of possibilities, but I hope for his family's sake that they find the truth one way or another,
And can lay him to rest.
yeah, can get the closure that they're looking for. Obviously, there's never fully closure for something like this, but mm-hmm. I think the truth is what we're all after with this case is just what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. yeah, just horrible. So young.
And if anything positive can come from that, it's helping people. You know, if we do know the truth about what happened, maybe it could prevent something else like this from happening again. If we right. do find out that he just, you know, wandered off the path and, you know, died due to the elements, you know, there can be some harm reduction, you know, training or stuff, you know, or awareness just put out there around,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, and if you're ever in this type of situation, you know, always take a buddy with you too, you yeah. know, leaving by yourself mm-hmm. anywhere is always a bad idea. And yeah. I feel like,
and like you can go into the night with that type of plan and things just get dicey when everyone's
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, it know? Is. It is. It's but easy it's to important sit here and these say that, stories but. For young people to hear and remember.
It's how like
south things can
there's
go.
There's
so quickly.
Many, so many things.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about our own kid. Like, I'm like hammer all these things into their mm-hmm. brain. They're like, mm-hmm. do not go anywhere without a buddy and just like get yeah. try to give them as much knowledge and awareness. But again, people are going to do what they're going to do. So you can only mm-hmm. do so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a tough one though.
Very tough. Well, we definitely want to hear from all of you. Let us know your thoughts, what theory makes most sense to you. And go check out their family's Facebook page. It's a Facebook page, correct?
Yeah, Missing Ryan Stuka.
Yeah, we'll link it below too. You know, it's always helpful for people to have that community and get some words of support. They seem like an amazing family.
Yeah, or if you're up in their area, I believe they're still organizing searches up there. So yeah. They encourage volunteers to come up there and help them search mm-hmm. The Sun Peaks area.
And also, I believe sometime in September, there's some type of like book fair happening. I don't know if it's in that area. I believe Heather will be there signing from her memoir that she wrote.
Oh, cool.
I read something about that. So that's on their Facebook page, though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll look more into that and put any information in the description box or show notes. But yeah, let us know what you guys think. Yeah, just horrible. God, so young. But that is going to be it for us today, you guys. We will be back next week. And until then, keep taking your mind a mile higher.
See you next time.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're here from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Come try new Skyline Dip Cholitos at your neighborhood Skyline today. A warm, soft tortilla filled with their amazing chili and cheese with an extra layer of cream cheese and crunchy Fritos corn chips at participating Skyline restaurants for a limited time.